C1S. Number 25A.
Now, we have started on this part of medicine. I never know if it's medicine or medicine. I only know that in one country, either in America or here, it will be right. Well, we don't have to forget that when we study this part, that it isn't Christian Science practice. This part doesn't show how to practice, how to apply, so to say, this medicine of mind to the individual situation. This part is just restricted to a clarification of what medicine is. You see? So it doesn't really give us a deeper insight into the practice of this medicine of mind, which is then will show naturally in the 12th chapter. So we can't expect more than what she wanted to show in this chapter. I try to give this chapter in its structure through these epitomes. I like it in giving epitomes because it seems to simplify one's thought. And here, especially in this text, where, as I said, Mrs. Eddy is perhaps giving illustrations which are a bit out of time and which she would illustrate today with new illustrations, we must see that not the actual text is important, but that the principle lying behind the text is the important thing. Therefore, the structure of the subject is the important thing, and not the way she illustrates it. And you see, I feel if Mrs. Eddy were here today, she would rewrite these chapters, most of these chapters, especially I think this chapter here, over and over, practically every other year. Because Mrs. Eddy was a very open-minded woman for what was going on in her time. Think of how she referred in her textbook constantly to the leading thought of her time, that she would deal with Darwin when Darwin came out with his new theory. She would deal with Agassiz with his theories. Well, who today knows Agassiz, what he was? Do you know who he was, where he was, what he was, you see? And yet we read practically, not we, but in the church, they read practically every year twice that Agassiz saw in the egg, the sun, the egg and so on, you see. Well, why? If we have a time where Einstein is living, where Niels Bohr is living, where Schrödinger is living, where we have all these forward-going thinkers of today, she would deal with what they are saying. We can be quite sure that today, in this age, she wouldn't go back to what 100 years ago some professor was saying. She would take what is being said today. We can be quite sure. Think of the joy Mrs. Eddy would have to write, to rewrite this chapter with in view what Einstein says about that there is no absolute time, no absolute space. Think of that. What that would mean, that she would have a support to show that all is idea, and that the idea is spaceless and timeless, and that that is the universe we are dealing with. Think what she would enjoy, say, reading James Jeans or so, where he says the universe looks today much more like a big thought than a big machine. All these things would come into the chapter very easily, very naturally. What are we doing? What we are doing is to read back the old illustrations over and over and over, and not taking the issues of our time. Not. Think Think what the Journal could do, what the Sentinel could do, what these publications could do if they would take up the challenge of our time, if they would see how Einstein's theories, how Planck's theories, how de Vries' theory of mutation, how all these new, big, mighty, forward-going thinkers, what they have to say and what we have to say to it, and how that would conform, converge with what we are thinking. But what are we reading in this literature? God is love and God is all in all. He is. I quite agree. But that's not going forward. Therefore, the Christian Zionist movement, and perhaps even we to a great extent, are not handling the situation of today. If we are not aware that the text we are given in the textbook are symbols of an underlying principle, and the symbols change, and as we arise the symbols disappear, and the more we arise the more we get the structure of the text and are no more relying just on that sentence that Agassiz was seeing in the in an egg, or what, I even don't know it. So many times I have read it. Because it's no more interesting. It's much more interesting to know that there is no time and no space. If we could see that, you see, if we would clearly challenge the physical scientists of today with our view that the universe is not a universe of ideas, timeless, spaceless, that would solve, because it's the biggest category, it would solve everything which is under this biggest category, namely the whole world consciousness. Everything it would solve. I think the one who has done this most pioneering work in this way is Gordon Brown with his books. I mean, he took up on his shoulder this heroic task of showing that the whole world, right, beginning from speech up to physics and so on, is not the universe outside of us, but that it is all one universe, and that rightly viewed it is so transparent that it is one universe of spirit, and translated right back to spirit. But this is a heroic task of a single man to undertake. It would be the job of the whole Christian Science movement and of us all together to see that the issue of today is, as we have seen in medicine, that there is a mutation taking place as never before for the last 2,000 years, a mutation taking place of a new consciousness which is going to grow. No, not to grow, because it's a mutation, it comes on us, you see. And it's a new consciousness of world consciousness. It isn't a matter of how can I heal this little thing and how can I deal with this little problem. If we can heal the world, we heal everything which is under that top category of the world. It's a new consciousness. And so if we take a text like this, let's be clear that we go more and more back to the underlying structure of that text and not be detracted too much by the textual illustration of the underlying principle. And actually, the deeper we go, the simpler it becomes to us, namely the simpler it becomes that it is, that we can all summarize it and recapitulate it in synonymous terms. It's quite natural that is the deepest level to which we reach. And it is not by chance that in these days, many of the people who are interested in this thing are feeling that they are rediscovering the synonymous terms, and that they want to reinvestigate the synonymous term, that they want to re-explore the synonymous term from a much higher and deeper level than what we have ever done before. It isn't that we start again with studying the synonymous term, but because one's thought has grown and grown to that point where consciousness begins to be integrated into the one being, we begin to feel and to touch and understand the synonymous terms from the one being, and no more from the student's point of view. And that is therefore the pith of the whole textbook and of the structure of the textbook. So we are going to have a jolly good time the next few years, because it's always unfolding. We just can't help it, because it's not we that are going to unfold this idea, but the idea demands us to listen to it, the idea demands us to obey to it. It's the idea that is really giving birth to itself. And so we just are in the position of be still and listen to this big majesty that is ready to be thrown upon this century. Well, we have taken the first subject on truth as mine, and we have seen that the very first thing we have to be clear about in any case which has to do with medicine is to see that mind is the medicine. That mind is the medicine. How do we see that clear? The first point is, well, because God is all in all, and God is mind, therefore mind must be the medicine. Therefore God must have made medicine. And then if the suggestion comes in and says, yes, but isn't matter also medicine, because it does also sometimes heal, we must see, no, the divine mind does not share its honor with anything else. The divine mind has never called matter medicine. If matter has done some healing, apparently, then it was the belief in matter that has done it. Therefore, third, we must see that the divine mind is that which is superior to the human belief and to the material beliefs. That the divine mind as medicine is that which stands high above the belief of in medicine. Now we come to spirit. In spirit, I have tried to summarize it like this and said, truth controls error only through spiritual means. You see, truth as spirit. Truth controlling error through what? Only through spiritual means, spirit. That spirit is the only medicine. That's what she wants to bring out now. Again, let's see the correlation. Truth as mind said that the divine mind really is the remedy for truth, really curative. Now, she says, and this truth in spirit only heals through spiritual means. How does she elaborate on that? You see, always the subtones are only elaboration of the main tone. They are not addition to the main tone. They only should clarify the main tone. The first point is, and you see at once that it has a touch of mind in it, of power in it, the power of mind does not coalesce, mingle, or cooperate with drugs. Can you see, only from the point of view of the synonymous terms, spirit and mind, spirit which does not mingle, not cooperate with something outside of itself, that spirit, and that is the only power. So that the power of mind does not coalesce, mingle, or cooperate with drugs. Here, she brings in the text, if I just can relate it in my words, she says, well, if mind is the grand creator, then mind is first chronologically, first potentially, first eternally, then mind gift to mind the honor, glory, dominion, and power everlasting to his holy name. You just hear the powerfulness of mind, you see, that this is the only power, you see, combination of spirit and mind, the only power, and that therefore this only power of mind does not mingle with inferior or unspiritual methods of healing. Therefore, that we don't try to make mind and matter coalesce. We have a saying in German, which I can't translate, that if you mend something twice, it sticks better. Meaning that if you use both ways, that it may be better, you see. That's the meaning here, says, no, that's not true. You shouldn't take drugs or use material means and say, I have a Christian Science treatment, it can't kill me. Can't do me any harm. See, the moment you have separated interest and in science, that doesn't, you can't play the game with that. It's the one mind, the power of mind, where we have to see, because it's the only spirit, the only mind, it does not coalesce and not cooperate with other material.
Coalesce.
Good, coalesce. I hope I can keep that. Thank you. It is here that she makes a statement which I used to have difficulties in understanding, and always when I think I have difficulty, I think the other ones may have difficulty too. And that's on page 144, line 3, where Mrs. Eddy says, if mind is foremost and superior, let us rely upon mind, which needs no cooperation from. You see, you have tone of mind and spirit. No cooperation from lower powers. And then she says, even if these so-called powers are real. She doesn't say even if those lower powers might seem real or so. She says, are real. And she illustrates it by that verse, naught is a squire when the king is nigh, withdraws the star, when dawns the sun's brave light. So, if we would have a seminar, I would like to ask you what you feel, what these lower powers are, which are real. But in this case, I just give a few of my thoughts, and it may give rise to your thinking along new lines. What are these lower powers which are real? See, there are lower powers which are real, because we know, for instance, from the early days of Christian Science, that the treatment through arguments did do a good job. That arguing truth were arguing about true things. So they were lower powers, but they were powers that were in line with truth. They were not truth itself, but in line with truth. We know that in early Christian times, healings were done by holy, uplifting faith. So that holy, uplifting faith are, as I see it, lower powers, because they have not risen to the understanding of science and to the status of science, but just the same, they were real. Or the power of prayer, the prayer of faith that shall save the sick. Believe we even can go as far as say the lower powers are the powers of metaphysics as compared with the power of science. The power of metaphysics are like the stars, but the power of science is like the sun. It outshines metaphysics. And so we can see here what I hinted before, that perhaps we are right now in a stage where we begin to realize more and more that higher light, that higher power which is real compared with the lower powers which were real in the way of we are reinvestigating and re-exploring the synonymous terms. Because now, when we re-explore the synonymous terms, we do them from the synonymous terms and not from the standpoint of thinking and of the human mind, investigating and studying. We are doing it from the point of view of vision, of the point of view of more than vision, of inspiration, more than inspiration, of revelation, more than revelation, of knowing, of the conscious identity of being, more and more. And the more we can do that, the more the textbook will yield its bigness, will yield its structure. The symbols of the textbook will begin to fade away, to take a secondary place, and the synonymous term will stand out more and more and more. The subject of the chapters will stand out more and more. So we see that mind, when we come to that standpoint, that she says that mind does not need the cooperation of lower powers. It's a tremendous thought. I don't know if I can express it, what one begins to feel, many of us begin to feel, that mind does not need the cooperation of lower powers, that when we touch the unity with mind and see that we have no other mind than the mind which is God, that frees us from all the way of argumentation, of belief, of metaphysics in the lower sense, and rises us to a higher plane, to a more integrated plane of the oneness of being, from which we see the whole system of divine metaphysics, from which we see the scientific metaphysics. And this is quite a different thing that is happening. Well, they are these translated powers, because we may call them, these lower powers, we may call them the translated power from the divine mind. Every power which is translated from the one mind and is taking shape in the power of faith or in the power of prayer or in the power of an argument is a translated power from the one mind. But naught is the squire when the king is nigh. And the more we rise, the more we will not need any less and less those translated powers. We will just be integrated into the one mind, and therefore have that mind which is the mind of Christ. And there is no other mind anymore then. Then we come to point two. After she has shown that this power of one mind needs no collaboration from lower powers, then she goes to the second point, which I summarized by saying mortal beliefs and human willpower are mainly predicated of matter and are detrimental. They produce evil continually. I mostly take in these summaries words and texts, words from the text, so as to give you a hint from where I have taken these summaries. What she shows here is really this, that material beliefs, like we have them in other sciences, like physiology and hygiene, that all these other sciences, except the science of spirit, of which he speaks afterwards, that all these sciences are predicated by matter, that they are not spiritual. That all these philosophies have a material touch. And that whatever is based on a material basis cannot bring forth anything good. Now you have spirit and spirit, you see. Or that everything which is based on spirit can only bring forth good. Or is that which alone can bring forth good. You have spirit, a spirit. So that any other power which is used, and she speaks here a lot about will power, that any other power than the power of mind which is used cannot bring forth good fruits, but are detrimental. That's the marginal heading on that side. 144. That human will power willing to help the sick is not science. Now we know that the moment in ordinary medical science they have begun to see or discovered soul as a factor in healing, that naturally the deficient sense of soul has come in by using willpower, hypnotism, etc., as a healing agent. And you know that much hypnotism is employed today in medical science. So here she wants to bring out, because willpower is not the power of mind, that willpower, whatever it will accomplish, in the long run, cannot be good. Because only mind, capital M, is bringing forth something good. Quite apart from the fact that it infringes the rights of men. Having said that, you see, let's see the sequence. First showing that the power of mind is the only power. That the power of mind does not share its might and intelligence with any other so-called power. Then she goes on and says, even then, when another so-called power seems to bring forth a result, it must be evil, detrimental, because only spirit can bring forth something good. As if she would say to us, don't be fooled by phenomena, because the pure reasoning will always show that only spirit can bring forth something good. Having said so much, then she shows in the third point, quite an interesting point, in the struggle for recovery, the spirit of immortal mind subdues the belief of mortal minds. You have again a sense of soul coming in, of subduing, being superior to. It's a struggle, the end of the struggle. How does the struggle between those opposing beliefs end? What ends that warfare? It's the spirit of science that ends that warfare. The marginal headings on page 144 and 145 are indicative of this struggle that is going on. You have there conservative antagonism, you see the struggle. Then on 145, the marginal heading, the struggle for victory, again the struggle. You know that spirit leads the warfare against any dualism. And then further on 145, matter versus matter. Again, the warfare. So you can hear from the marginal headings that here the warfare is being fought out, and she shows that warfare is fought out by seeing that the spirit of science is superior to the beliefs of mortal mind. She begins right away by showing that there is a war going on between science, between divine science and physical science, that old dragon of the apocalypse comes up again and again. That warfare is always between the spirit, the animal magnetism and the spiritual idea, never between people. And She says here that the old schools oppose accepting divine science. It is interesting, when I was reading one of the books of these psychosomatic medical people, they were saying that medicine is not willing, so to say, to take the consequences of their findings. That medicine is hampered by what? And he says, by fixed ideologies, by pride, unwillingness to think anew, unwillingness to seek new ways. So what we were thinking was only a sign of a religious mind that it is not willing to change, seems to be dominant in the medical profession too. And it's quite true, it's quite amazing how the old school physician still opposes psychosomatic medicine, and to take and to draw the consequences out or from the findings of them. And so what we have to see is that the same old mortal mind, the same old dragon, which is not willing to change, which is not willing to think anew, is everywhere hampering progress. Is it going to handle us? That's always the next question I ask when I see some other people not going forward. I say to myself, are we being willing to think quite anew? Not just elaborating a little bit, you know? Not just putting some nice, dainty little details at the end somewhere of our nicely thought out system, but to think fundamentally anew, or at least to be willing to be let to be thought by mind, divine mind, anew. This is a challenge. I think we should be consciously aware that that challenge is on us every day. And the more we accept that challenge, that we say, all right, I'm willing to leave the old landmarks every day, and I'm just willing to accept that a quite completely new view of being is being brought to birth within me, so that the idea of being is really bringing forth the new idea itself, then I think we are really scientists. Then we are willing to go forward. Or else the religious thought will also hold us back, just as it has done over centuries and thousands of years. Having said that, you see, that the sequence of those paragraphs are most interesting. Having said that really the old schools are opposing to go forward, to accept divine science, to accept something new, she takes in a suggestion which comes in with us and in the world so often, namely that the world says, why go forward? Why not go backward? Why don't you go backward to the time of Jesus, to the original healers? Why have the science of it? Why not just the spirit? Why have an understanding of the science? Why not be those simple disciples of Jesus? See, that's a suggestion that always comes in here and there. Well, everything that goes backward is wrong. Even if it goes backward to the paradise, it's wrong. Because going backward is going against the line of light. We can't... See, that's the great thing. The man of yesterday stinks. Huh? The manner. Manner. The manner, not the matter. See, we forget that that which worked yesterday may not work today. Why? because it may have worked yesterday, because it worked on a different level of consciousness. In the age of the magic period, well, a mental, a rational thought may not have worked, and vice versa. So that we must see that what was right yesterday may not be right today, may not be adapted today. That if we don't go forward, the old method may no more work. That's what people may not understand so often. They think what has worked years ago and hundreds of years ago and 2,000 years ago work today too. Well, that's not true. Only that which is completely divine and spiritual is timeless and works always. But other lower powers that worked 1,000 years ago may not work today, because we are in a different state of consciousness. And that's what one can see over and over, that if one does not go forward, that which was of value yesterday has no more value today. So she brings in that point, that question. It is on 144, it is down on line 30, it is a question today whether the ancient inspired healers understood the science of Christian healing, or whether they caught its sweet tones as the natural musician catches the tones of harmony without being able to explain them, you see, by flair. At that time, they healed by the flair. So divinely imbued were they with the spirit of science. Sorry, not with the letter of science, only with the spirit of science. I say only with the spirit of science. That the lack of the letter could not hinder their work. And that letter without the spirit would have made void their practice. I will come back to this paragraph later when I have gone through the subject of spirit to elaborate a little bit on it. Here I just want to indicate, you see what she says here, that at their time it was enough to have the spirit of it. And that the lack of the letter didn't matter. In the time of mysticism and in the time of flair, naturally, which was not yet impregnated by rational thinking, by the materialistic thinking on the other side, naturally in a flair atmosphere, in a flair age, you can heal by flair. And we'll see when I come back to this, how she points out the way to go forward and not backward. Not to say, well, therefore, why don't you go backward to that stage and just have the spirit of it and not the letter? Quite apart from the question, how do you get the spirit? So, here, see, we get that sense that the manna of yesterday is no more feeding, can no more feed us today. It's no more fresh, and there's no more work. So let's go forward. See, what I was trying to show this winter very often was this, that fundamentally in human consciousness, going back over thousands and thousands of years in human consciousness, that man went out somehow from a sense of oldness. They didn't have a sense of division, of duality. They always had a sense of allness. And then little by little, consciousness separated itself through the various ages from that centering allness, until man began to think by himself, that he is a creator, that through his thinking and through his experimenting, he can be a creator. And that then little by little we began to see in all sorts of sciences that the other trend is now coming to happen, that he is drawn back again to the unity, to unite the, first of all, man as an integral whole, as a whole, and then to integrate him into being, so as to come back again to the wholeness. But that wholeness which we arrive at will be a different wholeness. It will be an wholeness that is understood, spiritually understood, that it is not by flair and by, in an unconscious way, just felt, but that it is then understood. And therefore, these new physicists who are looking into matter, they begin to realize that the way is through science, but past science.